Paper 20, section 8.
Eight.
Which is old single column, page 231.
197.
Okay. Do you remember from last time, I hope? We started up the Trinity Teacher Sons. So, just remind yourself what they want to remind you of almost every time they refer to them, Trinity. Sometimes it's handy, and you'll see it some as we read tonight even, it's handy to think about an undivided Father-likeness and Son-likeness and Spirit-likeness that's in the Paradise Trinity. But not literally do they have three parents, you know, just the one parent, the Paradise Trinity. Remember how we ended that, for the Danels do not possess a spiritual drawing power in and of themselves. And if you think about why, remember you ask yourself, why is that? In order to have that, any sort of spiritual drawing power, they would have to have the Eternal Son as a parent. He's the absolute of spirit gravity. And they don't, so you know it's not, you know, that when they refer to the three, they don't mean literally that you had those three parents. There's just one parent, the Paradise Trinity. So now we're ready to, you know, after that little kind of general overview they gave us, we're ready to get into a little bit of the specifics about what they're up to in a local universe. Remember, that's primarily where their ministry lies, not so much in the central universe or in some sort of a larger super universe context, but narrowed down to a specific local universe. You see that local universe ministry. And then also, what do they do in that last, phase of the planetary mortal epics leading up to Light and Life? That's the planetary service. So, in other words, how are they directly related to us and our ascension scheme? All right.
Section 8, Local Universe Ministry of the Danels. The Paradise Spiritual Sons are unique Trinity origin beings, and the only Trinity creatures to be so completely associated with the conduct of the dual origin universes. They're affectionately devoted to the educational ministry to mortal creatures in the lower orders of spiritual beings. They begin their labors in the local systems, and, in accordance with experience and achievement, are advanced inward through the constellation service to the highest work of the local creation. Upon certification, they may become spiritual ambassadors representing the local universes of their service.
Let me just comment on that last thing first. That's kind of an interesting little aside that they throw in there. Notice that there's shades of them subbing for an Eternal of Days, when he leaves his Avona world, to go out and visit the Ancients of Days. That aspect of becoming an ambassador, sort of representing the whole of the local universe to another local universe. But that's that's just an aside. The main thing in play is all of this work, really within the local universe, and as you see when we go forward, engaging ascending mortals a lot. But you notice, they mentioned it's not just educational ministry to mortal creatures, like they said there, but also the lower orders of spiritual beings. They also are very much involved in as teachers to all of the lower orders, like seraphim and what have you, in the local universe as well. If for no other reason, maybe you could think in terms of, they could very well become ascenders down the road somewhere. Angel angels can certainly become ascenders, especially if they become a guardian, a guardian, a destiny guardian, and they're following an ascender up. So the Trinity teacher sons are engaging them also. Now, one little thing in passing, just, you don't know for certain, but you could be suspicious when it says, right there in the first sentence, that these unique Trinity origin beings, the only Trinity creatures to be so completely associated, It's like, completeness. Sounds a lot like totality attitude again. We noted in the previous section that they didn't get training, remember? It seemed to indicate that they're a very definitive totality attitude expression coming from the Paradise Trinity. So, you're not surprised by that. So it's kind of a heads up. It's like, I should maybe keep that in mind. There may be things that, as I go forward, that if I have that in the forefront of my mind, it'll help me to more immediately understand what they're referring to, or what they're even alluding to, perhaps, between the lines. Let's see, what else do we have in there? I think there was something else there, too. What was it? I forgot what it was now.
The dual origin?
You have Creator Son, Creator Mother Spirit. I'll remember it if it was important. But let's keep that in mind and see what else comes up here.
Well, I just want, what are they acquiring? If they start out in some way of supreme perfection, are they not?
You have that. That perfection, but do they have experiential completion?
No.
Yeah. That's almost always what's going on. It's a lot like, I get to paradise as a finality and I'm perfect. Why do I need to be out doing stuff still? It's like, well, maybe I'm just, doing things as a perfect being, helping out. But it's more than that. If you're not Trinity embraced, become a mighty messenger, where you basically have your accumulation arrested by that act, and you're sort of just completed by fiat. You're out there in that. You finish the perfection phase, then you're working on the completion phase. You're very much an experiential being. Where that experience results in growth, you are acquiring nature through, an augmented nature through that experience. So, same thing here. There, and you'll see how that comes around in a passing comment here down the way a little bit. That parallel between finaliters accumulating an augmented nature and their work also doing that.
The exact number of teacher sons in Nebadon, I do not know. There are many thousands of them. Many of the heads of departments in the Melchizedek schools belong to this order, while the combined staff of the regularly constituted University of Salvington embraces over 100,000, including these sons. Large numbers are stationed on the various Marantia training worlds, but they are not wholly occupied with the spiritual and intellectual advancement of mortal creatures. They are equally concerned with the instruction of seraphic beings and their native and other natives of the local creations. Many of their assistants are drawn from the ranks of the creature trinitized beings.
Okay, remember we've referred to that. You've got all those creature trinitized sons that come from the cross pairs of Paradise of Owner with a finaliter. All those creature trinitized sons not only work under the seven supreme executives, but also the Trinity teacher sons before they finally end up working directly with the Ancients of Days. Okay, so that's in play. That helps a lot. You don't have to have as many Trinity teacher sons, since they have, you know, all these assistants. And you know, in terms of the number, remember they said, you know, think about 21 billion sort of in play. You know, so if you just make some really crude, you know, assumptions, let's just assume, even though it may not be valid, they just divided equally amongst the super universes, and how many, you know, would you expect there to be in each local universe? If you just split it up, you know, uniformly, you'd have about 30,000. Okay, and you know, and they said there are many thousands of them. So okay, yeah, it seems to be, you know, and that's a reasonable ballpark estimate of what's going on in each local universe is something on the order of thousands, maybe, you know, 10,000, 20,000, maybe even 30,000, but, you know, probably not much more than that, unless there's a lot of, you know, using a lot of them here because they're needed here and there are not many needed over there or something, you know, going on. But and I, as soon as he started reading, I remembered what that other comment was I was going to make in the previous paragraph. Just to notice, they reminded you again the way they chose to talk about their sort of ascending, quote-unquote, experience here and going from the local system, the constellation, to the local universe headquarters, you know, so they used inward, you know, and just I wanted to remind you again of, you know, we often think of it, and the ascension scheme as a vertical analogy. But you can think of it as ever inward. And even though you go, well, yeah, but I mean, you're going from the local universe and then super universe, don't you have to think about some sort of an up? Just think about kind of a fractal-like inwardness. I mean, you're just always going inward. You go from the outer, you know, domains of the local universe to the center, to the headquarters. You know, and now you're just at some point in the super universe, you know, in the outer, you know, points of a local universe, just some point, kind of like a being on some inhabited world somewhere in a local universe. You're just some point in the super universe, and then you move inward towards the capital of the super universe. So, you know, you can definitely, you know, envision it as ever inward, just inward, inward, inward. You know, and then once you find yourself on the super universe capital, you're just at some point in the outer margins of the central universe, and you move inward again. See, so you can definitely think of it as always inward. If you just kind of, and then you can combine that inwardness with a vertical ascension, and that's what I mean. You can kind of think it's almost like fractal that you have. On a super universe scale, you have an inward, and there's and you zoom in to the fractal, and there it is again. There's another inward, you know, at a localized point. Yeah. So, and that's it, I've mentioned that you often have, you know, a fractal-like character, just because the hand that's over-controlling, in many cases, is very much transcendent of the space that we're thinking about the expression being in. So it's independent of scale, this pattern that's being imposed. And so the pattern exists at all scales, large, medium, and small, and microscopic, and, you know, macroscopic. You know, it's scale independent, this pattern that's being imposed. And so, not surprisingly, you know, we see all kinds of inwardness at all scales, either in a very literal geometric way or in a very helpful analog way, like the psychic circles, you know, giving us that picture to think of that as being an inward process, you know, and how that fits in if you think about the adjuster is this rod of integrity that's been extended down to you, and you just move in and ever closer circles until you have a circle, a first circler that's actually directly in contact with that adjuster, and then you just have to rotate your circle until you lock into place. Fuse. There's all these ways that that's really helpful to use that inward analogy to understand it. Okay, anyway. Let's see, so, and so notice again they're stressing that large numbers are stationed in the various Maharaja training worlds, but they are not wholly occupied with the spiritual intellectual advancement of mortal creatures. They are equally concerned with the instruction of seraphic beings and other natives of the local creation. So, keep that equal in mind. Don't bias it just because you're going to be an ascender. It's just as much of their action as going to the local universe creatures as well, besides us.
The teacher sons compose the faculties who administer all examinations and conduct all tests for the qualification and certification of all subordinate phases of universe service. From the duties of outpost sentinels to those of star students. They conduct an age-long course of training, ranging from the planetary courses up to the High College of Wisdom, located on Salvington. Recognition indicative of effort and attainment is granted to all, ascending, mortal, or ambitious cherubim, who complete these adventures in wisdom and truth.
Okay. I mean, they're giving you, some more sense about the completeness of their engagement. They're basically saying everywhere from there to there and there to there. And, so again, that totality attitude being expressed there. And there's one of the things that's always tough to begin to come to terms with in the fifth epical revelation. Examinations and tests. that this universe career that we're heading into isn't about playing the harp. And
all those lessons for nothing.
You're going to be an artisan, maybe.
Yeah, but there's still examinations and tests.
I hate tests.
There isn't anything that you get to the privilege of doing, like being an astronomer here, star students, without going through a whole series of examinations to the result of which is that it's determined that you are that particular mode of expression in the super universe. Think about how it's in all cases, like you, the creative mother spirit makes a bunch of seraphim, and they immediately get examined and sorted out. It's like, you put them under the microscope. Oh, well, you're like that, and you're like that, and oh, here's another one like that one, and they get sorted into seven piles. Okay, they can evolve from there, but. Everything is carefully. The beings in the universe know that there's nothing random about God's creative hand. Everything has a place, and so they're always very methodical about examining and figuring out where this piece goes. If you want to ascend, you have to prove that you are worthy of taking the next step up. Just because you have the energy to lift your leg and take the next step doesn't mean you get to. Because it's literal. To go up a notch in the universe means that you literally have a nature that's like that higher nature of that next step up. So you have to demonstrate that you are of that higher nature. And if you aren't completely filled out to match up with that next level, they'll say, oh, you missed a spot over here. And you'll fill in that spot, and then you can take that step up. Let's see. Now notice the thing they're starting to bring in here. who compete, or who complete, excuse me, yeah, there is some competition too, I suppose, but who complete these adventures in wisdom and truth. The question we haven't really kind of answered yet is, what exactly is this teaching about? You know, what's the flavor of this teaching? You know, they're telling you they teach very broadly, sort of everyone needs to be taught something by them. But exactly what is this universal necessity of teaching? And so you're starting to get a sense of, you know, everyone needs wisdom and greater relationship to truth. So keep that in mind too as we go forward here. Yeah.
I was just thinking about the abstract versus the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
That wisdom and truth are very abstract concepts, and to teach wisdom and truth, it would seem to me, would have to be situational. It would have to put you in a situation in which you're tested in as to your wisdom, your evolution of wisdom and truth. It's not something you can memorize,
right,
like you
right.
can an abstract.
Especially
person.
Not truth.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so
you
it's got to be situational.
Yeah. And
experiential. Experience.
Keep that thought, and when we get into the next section, you know, you'll see how that comes into play a little bit more.
Well, do you think the teaching is more like consulted teaching, or like structured teaching, where you show up for class every day, and like we have a structure here? Or how do you think it happens?
Well, I mean, obviously, any thought I might have is probably not very relevant, but. But, you know, I think Maria's point is the most solid thing you can probably begin
situation.
With. Recognizing that
situation.
You are, you know, they're testing you, like I said, to see if you have acquired a certain measure of experiential nature.
When they teach what you still
yeah.
need.
So you can't acquire that existentially,
no
you know, in some sort of very cold... you know, classroom with nothing but a book.
Right.
You know, it has to be very, very dynamically experiential in order to acquire the experiential stuff that they are trying to figure out if you literally possess, like, you know, they're measuring with calipers, you know. Oh, your experiential size is 3.8. It needs to be 4.0 if you're going to go to the next, you know, notch. Okay, Jason first here, just a second.
Thank you, Chris.
Yep.
This reminds me of, I think, the last paper, or the second last paper, it talks about if our education would only teach youth more on life planning and character progress. I think that might be related to that. Because I had an experience with somebody that asked me, well, what is truth? Somebody perceives it differently than somebody else. And I kind of thought, well, what about the six levels of meaning? We can find truth in each one of those levels, and whether our perception is zero or one through seven,
mm-hmm.
They're all there for us to find the truth in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And whether it's balanced and...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a very important aspect of truth. It's relativity to the size. You know, if you think about it in just simple terms, the relationship between fact and goodness being that initial dynamic of truth, the bigger the fact you are, higher you are in the levels of meaning, the bigger the fact you are, the more relationship to goodness, and the more truth there is there. Yeah, Jeanette?
Relative to teaching, I was just thinking that it's probably more like watching and assessing rather than, you know, plopping down an 80-page exam and here sit here and go through this and you fail or you pass. It's situational. It's a becoming and being watched as you become, don't you think?
Yeah, and it's, you know, just wanted to... where was it they said that here? I mean, you notice that they do distinguish there. Administer all examinations and conduct all tests. So there's a bidirectional phenomenon. On the one hand, they're examining you sort of in motion, you know. You're going about your business, and they're examining you. So it's from them to you. And the other one, conducting tests, that's, you're trying to feed something to them. What exactly that is, I'm sure it's not true, false, A, B, right, it's not going to be, like an SAT test, but they are trying to point out there is some kind of a, something that's not just an examination of you, functioning, going about your business.
Your character.
You have to go somewhere and manifest something to prove yourself in some way. You're put to the test.
They say these adventures.
Yeah. I think that they orchestrate, choreograph a situation, and that way they conduct it.
Right. Think about if you're a gymnast and you go to the Olympics. The spotlight shines on the equipment and you march out there and, you're being put to the test.
And there's
they hold
coach.
Up numbers,
And there's a coach that's conducting that.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of ways that, that you can be tested. Now, maybe just one little thing there. Outpost sentinels, I'm not sure exactly what...
I don't know.
An outpost sentinel is
guard duty.
Kind of a curious.
Sounds like the military.
Wolves from the duties of outpost.
Yeah, and why that's sort of in some way another the other end of the spectrum from the astronomers, the star students. I'm not quite sure what spectrum they're alluding to there. That it's going from one end to the other. Up. If you have anyone has any thoughts, sometime let me know. All right, let's get some more in here.
In all universes, all the sons of God are beholden to these ever-faithful and universally efficient Trinity teacher sons. They are the exalted teachers of all spirit personalities, even the tried and true teachers of the sons of God themselves. But of the endless details of the duties and functions of the teacher sons, I can hardly instruct you. The vast domain of Danal sonship activities will be better understood on Urantia when you are more advanced in intelligence and after the spiritual isolation of your planet has been terminated.
Okay, so two things in there. We'll get to that last part in a second. Just notice in passing there, they're teachers of even the tried and true sons of God. So that gives you, the creator sons have got to go through some experiential learning in the central universe. Like the Trinity teacher sons are part of their teaching regimen, their educational regimen there. Now that last part is segueing into the next section. So, think about what they're alluding to here. The normal process of the planetary mortal epics, where you have the planetary prince and his staff come, and then Adam and Eve, and then at least one magisterial son, and then a bestowal son, and then at least one Trinity teacher son. Okay, so in that sequence, in order for a Trinity teacher son to come in that normal sequence, you've gone through that whole upstepping process. It's the post-upstepping man, post-upstepped, fully, threefold upstepped man that is being engaged by those Trinity teacher sons. So, more advanced in intelligence indeed. Okay, mm-hmm. Something quite beyond what we can even comprehend right now, intelligence. Okay. One of the things between the lines there is, if you're thinking that tomorrow maybe a Trinity teacher son is going to come and all of your idealistic, dreams will be realized, no. No matter what you think about, it's Michael's world and the spirit of truth can accelerate the evolutionary process, or you know, yada, 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 no matter what kind of a scenario you might dream up, nothing is going to change the fact that we've got people on the planet, by and large, that are far too primitive.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, no one's going to snap their fingers and make and deprimitize us. Evolution has to take care of that. So, yeah, you can imagine all kinds of scenarios with magisterial sons, you know, even Michael coming again, and Machiavelli, Melchizedek, and all. Yeah, you can, all that stuff. But a Trinity teacher son is only going to come when all of whatever bizarre, different process we're going to go through is said and done. So that effectively, we're at the point that a normal world is through its long, methodical process. Okay, and it's a long, remember how long the process is, sort of is on average. I mean, on average, you've got about 500,000 years for a planetary prince. On average, you got about 25,000 years for the, you know, the reign of you know, the immediate post-Adamic age. And then magisterial sun age, you've got 25 to 50,000 years. And then the bestowal sun age, you know, post-bestowal sun age, 10 to 100,000 years. Okay. So, you know, in the normal methodical process, you know, let's say you've got 175, yeah, I mean, yeah, plus the five, I mean, you've got a lot of time. Okay. And so whatever happens here has to somehow eventuate in that much evolutionary time, in one way or another. Okay, it's a vast intelligence gap that has to be overcome through some means. Tens of thousands of years of a normal process to get man, you know, the mortals on a world to the stage that they have any relationship to what the Trinity teacher sons are going to teach.
Yeah. So you're talking about people won't be freaking out at that point when these types of beings show up.
Right. Right. And another thing that sort of strengthens that thought is that other thing. See, and after the spiritual isolation of your planet has been terminated. See, again, the very fact that this planet would still be in isolation indicates our lack of holistic, you know, character, which is what they need in order for you to be teachable by them. You know, if we're isolated, we're not part of the whole. You know, see, so that's just a, you know, they're just trying to remind you that it's you can have some variation like we are experiencing up to the Trinity Teacher Sons, but the beginning of the Trinity Teacher Son age is no matter what the path of the inhabited world, it all kind of comes to a common point at the beginning of that. Everyone is on the same square at the beginning of that Trinity Teacher Son age, and so anything that's abnormal has been overcome. Okay, and of course, just the Trinity, you know, teacher son age is at a minimum 1,000 years. Yeah, you know, before. So, you know, when all is said and done, you have a very definitive fact you can think about if you want to imagine light and life on this planet. Okay, no matter how fast you imagine things getting fixed by Michael, by all kinds of cool things that he might do. The best that he could do is in some short span of time get things up to the beginning of the Trinity Teacher Son age. And then it's at least 1,000. I mean, one, you know, Trinity Teacher Son age is 1,000 years. You know, and sometimes there's multiple visitations. Okay. So there's no way that this planet can get to light and life in less than 1,000 years from now. Yeah. If tomorrow Michael snaps his finger and fixes everything and we're at the beginning of a Trinity Teacher Son age, it's 1,000 years after that, at least, before it would be light and life. So You know, forget about light and life being something you're going to experience in your lifetime. Okay, it's not possible. Okay, well, he had his hand up first. Yeah.
What does this sentence mean where they say that the teacher sons and the finaliters are now engaged in acquiring the experience of time association, which may be the preliminary training? It's like the... I'm reading the next paper.
Yeah.
We're going to catch up with you.
You're going to catch up with me in a minute. Then I'm going to ask that question.
Okay, all right. All right,
but could you talk just a little bit about how out of sync we are, because we got Michael's partial bestowal 2,000 years ago. We got the material sun bestowal 32,000 years ago. We were isolated 200,000 years ago. So in the past 200,000 years, we have the Urantia book. We've had three sort of dispensations in 2,000 years. In 200,000 years. In 200,000 years.
Well, I mean, you know,
it's really out of sync, I think. It's really out, really, we've been given exceptional things.
You know, the backside tail of our bell curve distribution on this planet, you know, is very much out of sync. You know, when you read about what the planetary prince's staff attempt to teach the mortals, it's like, wait a minute, I know that mode. I mean, we're doing that with people on the planet right now, trying to teach them those exact things. So in other words, we have people on the planet right now that are at the beginning of the planetary princes regime. And normally that's 500,000 years of evolution. Okay? So, I mean, see, but like I said, I mean, it's the wild card world. You've got the spirit of truth in play. And Michael can do whatever he wants. You know, we could wrap up the 500,000 and the 25,000 and the other 25,000 for the magic. We could wrap that all up in some much shorter period of time through some sort of accelerated ministry on his part. I mean, but that, you know, then you're just, you know, back to normal, and now you've got at least 1,000 years before light and life.
Chris, yeah. Maria said partial bestowal of Michael.
Well, yeah, in the sense of, you know, you've heard me mention, you know, what's the easiest way to understand why Michael said he has to come again? Because he came out of order. He couldn't do all of what, I mean, he could do the whole, you know, being born of woman and maturing to an adult. He could do that. Okay, he's done with that. His seventh bestowal, he's definitely done with his seventh bestowal. But the bestowal son thing is a different matter. He could do very little of the spiritual uplifter thing because we don't have all of the planetary prince or the Adam and Eve or the magisterial, you know, no magisterial son at all. So he has to come again, at least, because once the precursors to the spiritual uplifter are in place, then he can actually uplift us.
Thank you.
Yeah. In the full sense, it's spiritual upliftment is more than just pouring out the spirit of truth. You know, it's inaugurating an age where the people, because they have the ability to assimilate that spirit that's poured out, realize what's poured out. I mean, it tells us directly in the book that on this planet right now, the spirit of truth has hardly been used yet. Okay, because it's a way ahead of its time in terms of most of its normal functioning on a world. It can't do most of what it can do because it doesn't have the ability to plug into us. We are an adequate foundation for it in many ways. Yeah, it can get us an adjuster, but to completely transform civilization? No, it can't even start that process, you know, so...
From our point of view, there seems to be a real sense of hurry up, hurry up. But from their point of view, there's no sense of hurry whatsoever. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency at all, and then you have to ask yourself, well, why would there be?
And if there were, that would be the beginnings of at least a fault, if not rebellion.
Right.
It all begins with impatience.
Right.
But isn't this an emergency?
Yeah.
Well, this is an emergency, you know, philosophic sense, because the magisterial son can't come to do anything if we've just descended into complete darkness again. You know, if we're literally all back in planetary prince sort of times, you know, the magisterial son can't come. Yeah, he, unlike the creator son, who has the authority to do things ad hoc, you know, and Adam and Eve, for instance, only come when the biologic evolution has reached its peak, and no sooner. I mean, they don't have sex. Well, I don't want to wait until, you know, no, there is no, there's a specific time when an Adam and Eve come, period. You know, there's a specific time that a magisterial son comes, period. I mean, he can't say, I'm going to come earlier or whatever, like Michael did. So we have to get to the point where at least some subset of mankind is engageable by the ministry of the magisterial son. And this is here in an effort to that we don't lose the budding potential to be engaged by a magisterial son in the not too distant future. If we lose it, if we ignore this and descend into another interregnum, well, then it's going to be a long time before a magisterial son comes, because we're going to have to rebuild everything that we've lost. He can't come anyway. Yeah.
Well, this being an emergency revelation, and the last emergency revelation that was on the planet was Machiavelli Melchizedek, and he came at an auspicious moment to prepare the soil for the coming of Michael, because monotheism was disappearing. So this is the same sort of a thing. It's preparing the ground and trying to bring us up to a point where the next one can.
And it looks an awful lot like it's going to play out the same way it did with Machiavelli and Melchizedek's emergency efforts.
Right.
They, you know, he threw a rock in the pond, you know, and the ripples went out and sort of just dissipated, and it looked like it was all a waste of time.
But not really.
And then suddenly, in the 6th century B.C., there was a curious, mysterious spiritual quickening that coalesced the wavelets from the rock he dropped in the pond again. Yeah. You know, what have we said seems to be looming in the not-too-distant future? Because when you think about what this book is and how sad it is to record out there, it looks like the ripples are going to damp out and the pond is going to go placid again, okay? But what if the seventh adjutant dawns in the leading edge of the collective, okay? And suddenly, there will be a group of people on the planet, not the whole planet, but a group of people who can coalesce, you know, the ripples
like the
that go out.
Like the Kenites.
From this book that's been dropped into the pond here.
Okay. Just coincidentally, it arrived when, at the time of the information age, just like the printing press, for instance, we're seeding the planet so that even if there is an interregnum, what's left will be what was seeded.
Sure, even if you play that out, you can see that how there's a positive side. But just notice that it's looking awfully suspicious, like it might play out in the same way, where it's going to go on for a long time and it looks like no one cares. You know, and then maybe in the not-too-distant future, you know, you get this quickening in the mind of man. See, and it's not going to be... Remember, for this, Machiavelli was a spiritual emergency, and you got a spiritual quickening.
Intellectual thought.
This would be, see, the quickening we're talking about with the seventh adjutant, that's an intellectual quickening. See? Again, see, it's very suspicious that this is how it's going to play out again. That there's no magical father-like thing, you know, overtly that everyone can detect and observe, that where this is going to engage mankind. There's going to be this mysterious coalescence in, you know, in the mother. And there's going to be a handful of people who have eyes to see and ears to hear. You know, that currently aren't on the planet, by and large. And they're going to take this up.
And speaking of eyes to see, the big thing that's different now in our time that was never so in the past is all these telescopes up there. We are looking out and seeing ourselves in an entirely different way.
Right. Remember, if you're going to have a philosophic quickening, philosophy is predicated on two facts. There has to be some religion. Well, we have lots of the beginnings of religion on this planet. We've had it for ages. You know, unlike the neighboring planet, for instance. Science, though, you know, is pretty recent. It's only just now that you have the basics that you need, that you could really build a true philosophy upon. You know, great minds have been trying for 2,500 years to really advance philosophy, and they haven't really succeeded because the relationship to facts just wasn't there. I mean, Thomas Aquinas or whoever can be as brilliant as, you know, as the day is long, when you know almost nothing about the physical world, you don't have the other half of the equation to build philosophy. Yeah. And you know, so, you know, and we all know that you know, religion could use some help with its facts too. It's got a lot of the energy that it needs, but you know, it's a little sparse on the grounding that it needs. So, yeah, and you know, this gives you what religion doesn't, you know, hasn't acquired evolutionally. What science so far hasn't acquired evolutionally. This fills in all the blanks, coordinates the essential knowledge. So, it's all here now. If you can build a true philosophy now.
With all due respect, and I know that respect is here, but I feel in my heart that Jesus was also part of an emergency, and I feel even a quickening.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, he wasn't. It wasn't technically an emergency, but the very fact that he came out of sequence means he introduced an emergency-like element to it. He injected the accelerating agent of the Spirit of Truth. You know, when all is said and done, I'm sure we're going to look back and say, whoa, it's a good thing he did that, because we couldn't have gotten from point A to point B if we hadn't had that, you know, that quickening agent of the Spirit of Truth and the thought adjusters. Undoubtedly, that's why he, you know, in some big picture wisdom, that's why he chose us. You know, now the curious thing is, you know, he didn't choose the neighboring planet. But apparently, there's a path forward for them without the Spirit of Truth being in play, you know, as early as it is for us. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I just want to, I remember a part in the book, and maybe you know the paper and section, but it says we could have all at one time the Michael, the Magisterial Son, the Adam and Eve, the Trinity Sons, and the Melchizedeks all at once.
Right. I mean, there is this, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can imagine some really accelerated process. Some of the revelators imagine such a thing, where through all kinds of direct engagement, we get over all of the retardation of the world. You know, we get ourselves back on track. You know, and so all those people that got us back on track are there, and here comes the Trinity Teachers up. So you can imagine that scenario. But
that's what it's going to take.
But you know, whether or not that's actually going to, way it's going to play out, who knows? Yeah. No one knows. None of the revelators know. But you can certainly imagine a really, really accelerated thing. There really isn't any. There's no way you can force the time from here to the Trinity Teacher Son arriving to be it, like it has to be at least this long. It's Michael's world. It can be as short as he wants it to be through whatever incredible interventionary act he wants to do. I mean, maybe he will eliminate 7/8 of the people on the planet and quickly move the other 1/8 forward, for instance. That would, you know, shorten the time scale really quickly. And the spiritual idealist, or the idealist, I should say, the material idealist, probably doesn't, you know, wasn't thinking of that, you know, method.
But, well, and the degenerates. I mean, we have not dealt with those degenerates.
Right, so they're, that's one of the huge questions, is how you get this menagerie that we have all on the same page. You know, you can imagine taking the 5 people that are on the leading edge and getting them forward really quick. But, well, what about the other 7 billion?
You know, talking about what Jason said.
Nice ratio.
2 of the other bestowals that Michael did had to do with rebellions, too.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yeah. 2 of Michael's other bestowals had to do with rebellions in other systems.
Or, to flip it around, there's been 3 rebellions. Yeah. And coincidentally, one of his bestowals engaged each of the 3. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So,
rescue missions, all of them.
Yeah. But, again, you know, remember, the rebellion wasn't just on this planet. You know, that's, you know, there's all the other rebellion spheres that didn't get Michael. That, so, you know, and he didn't engage us at the system level so that he took care of all the rebellion worlds at the same time. He just picked out one. So that's a little bit, you know, different than the other 2, where he kind of really put a bow on the other 2, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of loose ends here still.
I just figure we're not going to go on schedule. Nothing has been.
But I just wanted, you know, even when you read that passage and you get all excited about all of them being here, and say, remember, the Trinity teaches Son arrives, and at a minimum, that's 1,000 years till light and life. So nothing, you know, yeah, nothing is going to get to light and life faster than 1,000 years, no matter what you imagine.
To the point that the telescopes would affect us. There seems to be some people that knew that ahead of time. There's a guy named Frederick Hoyle, British astronomer, philosopher. 1948, he said.
According to Hoyle.
According to Hoyle. Yes. Once a photograph of the Earth taken from outside is available, a new idea as powerful as any other in history would be let loose.
Yeah. But, you know,
that was before we had any photographs.
But, of course, notice, you know, that was a very insightful, but bit idealistic, over-idealistic thought. I mean, we have all kinds of amazing things that we can all see now. And it's sad to record that so few persons take the light and even, you know, one moment of reflection on the consequences of those pictures that we now have readily available. You know, many still willfully circumscribe their worldview to a tiny little space.
One could say, though, that there's been an increase in thinking about the environment since those photographs.
We've made huge progress. I mean, don't get me wrong, but just notice, you know, it isn't quite as magical. You know, it's like those Urantia book readers, you know, years ago, that when they found the book and they, this is incredible. I mean, they were pretty sure just the act of them reading it was going to change everything, you know, and they read about, you know, 10 pages and just lifted up their hands and waited for the rapture.
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah.
That's what I
there was a, there was an awful lot of the early, you know, forum crew and stuff that were certain, you know, that almost instantly, if they just threw a couple of them out into the population, everything would radically change.
That's what I
Yeah, right.
No. No, they just, like Don said, everyone just used them for door stops and fire starters.
Well, hopefully not everyone.
But huge piles of books, you know, just disappeared into the darkness. All right, let's read some more here.
Section 9, Planetary Service of the Daenals. When the progress of events on an evolutionary world indicates that the time is ripe to initiate a spiritual age, the Trinity Teacher Sons always volunteer for this service. You are not familiar with this order of sonship because Urantia has never experienced a spiritual age.
If you had any doubt about it.
A millennium of cosmic enlightenment. But the teacher sons, even now, visit your world for the purpose of formulating plans concerning their projected sojourn on your sphere. They will be due to appear on Urantia after its inhabitants have gained comparative deliverance from the shackles of animalism and from the fetters of materialism.
Never happened.
Yeah, we were talking about that last time.
A little thing about maybe, you know, cautious about holding your breath. But a bunch of things in there. Okay, first of all, when you start reading that, when the time is ripe to initiate a spiritual age. So you've only read that far and you're going, oh no, wait a minute, I thought the bestowal son was the spiritual uplifter. It's at that point you go, oh, maybe this is one of those cases where they don't mean spiritual in the narrow use of the word, but in the more general sense of the word. So you keep reading. And it says, a millennium of cosmic enlightenment.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in the same sense that you call it the Holy Spirit, you know, the word spirit there is not, you know, just in the limited sense of the spirit block here. It's in the holistic sense where you can call all three cosmic intuitions spiritual insight. Okay, it's in that greater triunity sense of unity, likeness, spiritual nature. Okay, that's what they mean. So cosmic. That's the real key right there. They're trying to get you to think. Okay, so what's the sequence here? I have an Adam and Eve that come and are as biologic uplifters. Then I have a magisterial son that comes as an intellectual, philosophic uplifter. And then a bestowal son that comes as a spiritual uplifter, spiritual in the limited sense of the word. Now I have the threefold actuality. I have individuality, associativity, and unity, each being one descending son, specifically focused on one of the three facets. Once I have all three, then the next individual that comes works on making that, bringing those three together into a triunity, making it cosmic. Not just mere enlightenment, but cosmic enlightenment. Yeah, not just merely spiritual, but in the greater sense, spiritual. Yeah, in the same way that I use unity here in that greater sense, where you might, but you might say unity like in the more limited sense when I point at the spirit block here. We have to use these words in general and specific ways all the time. And so that's what the Trinity Teacher Son is about. You have to have individuals on the world, and who knows, like in our case, what the minimum percentage is. On a normal world, it's basically everyone on the planet is all on the same page. I mean, maybe it won't be quite like that. Maybe there'll be a little bit greater spread when they come here. But like I was saying before, not too likely there's going to be much different spread than on a normal world. Probably no different than the normal variation between all the normal worlds. We might be on the sort of the wide side of the normal variation. Yes, you could imagine that. Okay, but so just think. See, that's the sequence: individuality, associativity, unity, and then the harmony. They're going to come, to really bring in this fourth block on the chart, to really begin to get personality in play, because now it has all three things fully actualized from the three previous dispensations, and it can begin to work on realityizing that threefold actuality. That's what the Trinity Teacher Sons are about. And just think about how appropriate that, they're Trinity origin beings where a threefoldness is innately undivided together as one. They're the teachers, see, of a holistic character. They come to foster your relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole to everyone else and everything else. That's the Trinity teacher sons. Okay, and then that last part, again, to think about us. Notice the use of shackles and fetters too, you know, I mean, in a sense they're synonyms, but fetters is, you know, sort of very literally leg shackles.
Really?
Okay. And, you know, matter is very much the foundation thing. I mean, an animal is built upon a material foundation. So you can see how they're using the words even in a hierarchical sense. That shackle, in a sense, is a higher word than fetter. And animalism is a higher thing, to a degree, than merely materialism. But animalism, think about that one. Remember in the paper about the Guardians of Destiny, Seraphic Guardians of Destiny, they point out that you finally are beginning to break free from the inertia of your animal nature, the animalism, at a third circular.
Third circular.
Okay. So, you know, reinterpret what they just are saying there. In other words, the planet has to have a significant third circle population. Now, it doesn't have to be some, you know, near 100% or something. Because even mentioned in the Light and Life papers that it's not until you get into Light and Life that you start to have a really vast number of people who are third circlers.
Right.
Okay. But that's, you know, between the lines there. We've got to get to the point where we've taken enough delight in cultivating that we have a significant number of people who aren't in that mode where they're just exalting animal nature and calling it human. Remember, we've talked about that a number of times. So many things that we say, well, that's just human nature. No, that's not human nature. That's animal nature that behaves like that. That's animal. And to exalt, falsely exalt that animal nature and call it human is animalism. See? So everyone who's, you know, for instance, says, well, you know, to live a life of drama is to be human. That's animalism. That's an animalistic thought. You're exalting animal behavior, calling it human, making an ism out of it, you know, and wanting to eternalize it, wanting to glorify it, you know, and try to somehow preserve it, you know, that there should be drama forever, you know.
Yeah. Next time you hear someone say, well, I'm only human, you need to say, you wish.
And materialism, let's challenge that too. You know, if you begin this career on this planet favoring your spiritual consciousness, you have an immediate tendency of interpreting the word materialism. You know, oh, there's a materialistic person, you know, and you're pointing at someone that you notice is greedy or selfish or whatever. You know, or trying to see how many knickknacks they can collect or whatever. You know, that's their whole life. That gives their whole life meaning, is, you know, just engaging material things. But don't forget, one of the most problematic expressions of materialism is idealists who think don't precisely constrain their idealism to be spiritual idealism. If it's material idealism, they're materialists. Idealists who try to realize their idealistic visions with material things are material idealists. They're materialists. You know, they're trying to get they're trying to eliminate all hunger or all whatever. You know, I mean, you know, that's their whole focus of idealism. It's not that one day there won't. You want to eliminate hunger, but it's going to be eliminated through evolutionary process, not some idealistic fiat
policy.
You know, and it will be eliminated by a normal process if those idealistic people focus their idealism on spiritual issues so that individuals have rock-solid spirit cores. And then coincidentally, as they go about doing good with that spirit core, the matter will come into better arrangement. Okay? Healthcare will improve and whatnot. Okay? But to just say, well, forget about my inner life. I just want to make an idealistic outer life. See, that's material idealism. I want to eliminate, you know, anyone ever dying of unnecessarily of a disease or something, you know, because they don't have health insurance or something like this. I mean, it's like, no, you're putting the cart before the horse. Okay? You got whited sepulchers, you know, walking around full of dead men's bones. I mean, you got to work on that part. Let's work on the spiritual idealism. That's where that zeal needs to be applied, is fostering rock-solid integrity in individuals' inner lives. And you'll be amazed if you seek first the kingdom of heaven, how that will manifest in the outer life. You won't have to force people to function more idealistically in their outer lives if they have a real inner life. You won't have to pass laws and, institute regulations and whatnot to try to achieve this outer life idealism anymore. It will happen naturally.
The outer livers are like the dead trying to bring life to something.
Okay, so why is it another reason why it's a long time before we can, at least in developmental, even if it's not temporally, it's a long process until we can get a Trinity teacher son. Even our idealists are materialists right now, by and large.
Yeah.
Okay? They're not teachable by Trinity teacher sons. Okay? They know not the cosmos.
Just a quick thing. I just learned that Jefferson changed Constitution.
Declaration.
He changed it from the pursuit of property to the pursuit of happiness. It used to be pursuit of property. Now, of course, they changed it back and they figured, well, the pursuit of happiness must mean I can have more property. You know, I mean, they didn't take it, but that was a leap.
Especially if you interpret it truthfully,
yeah.
If you actually know what the word happy means, if you don't think it just means a contented animal that has a full belly and, you know, and no big sores on his body or something. Okay?
Chicken in every pot.
I mean, happy is one of the highest words that there is. Happy is a sixth level of meaning word. And the most horrendous thing that many modern thinkers do is use it for the first level of meaning. They think it's a word that describes a phenomenon in the level of the flesh.
Or feeling.
Like a dog is happy.
That's so good.
Yeah, because his belly's full. Like, no. Carefully study how the word, happy is used in the book. For instance, happy are they? Happy is a very sacred word that is being horrendously distorted. And not just ignorantly misused, but deceitfully being twisted by many individuals. There's many individuals on the planet who are purposely trying to turn it upside down to get us away from the truth. Okay? Don't let people use the word happy for lowly things. Challenge them, to recognize that the reason the revelators say that we know almost nothing of happiness is because it's sad to record that even the most spiritual, quote-unquote, people on the planet are really materialists. They're far from the sixth level of meaning. They know not what that word truly means. But you should desperately want to know what it truly means, to experience the truth of happiness. And you should be taking delight in cultivating, working on your circles, becoming more cosmic.
That's
let's go over the seven levels of meaning. Where is that?
Oh, in the single column, it's on 1650, isn't it? If I remember right.
I think so. You're just throwing that out there pretty glibly, and I'm struggling to remember.
Yeah, the rule of living is on 1650, you know, rolling over to 1651.
What paper is that?
That's paper...
147.
Yeah, 147, section... Was that 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, section 4.
Rule of living.
You know,
yes, you're all there.
So, you know, we don't need to go through, you know, the way he's illustrating the levels of meaning with the golden rule there necessarily, but just, you know, recognize it in general terms, like we're always using it. The level of the flesh, the level of the feelings, the level of mind, okay? And then, especially when you go away from that specific illustration, you know, let's call that the logical level, above the level of mind, the moral level and the spiritual level. So we have those six levels, and they're formed by the first level of meaning exists because the first three adjutants form a triplet. They form a set of in the moment of the flesh adjutants. First three adjutants make the first level of meaning. In order to have feelings, you have to go out of the moment. You have to have some at least little measure of eternalization of your consciousness. You have to have a longer-term consciousness. The next three adjutants, 4, 5, and 6, are the long-term adjutants. They have that in common. They form a set. They establish the second level of meaning. Now, and in a human, you know, very definitively having the sixth adjutant in the second level there instead of just 4 and 5, energy of zeal, can be some really powerful feelings in the level of the feelings.
Yeah.
Where's the seventh one?
And then, what was that?
There's only six there.
There's six levels of meaning, and that's because there's seven of them, but the first one is numbered 0. It's actually 0 through 6 that they're numbered. The 0th level of meaning is established by pre-adjutant mind, by mechanical mind. That's the level of fear. That's the foundation of the animal nature. Okay, Jesus is not, you know, bringing that in when he's illustrating there. But yeah, so there is seven. Like you know, expect there always be seven. Yeah, there is. Just we number 0 through 6 here. Okay, then the seventh adjutant, spirit of wisdom, you know, is a set unto itself. You know, the seven adjutants break up into three sets: 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6, and then 7. And so the seventh adjutant makes the third level of meaning. And at that point, as Jesus says, now you're talking about something that the universe considers minded. Now, then if you go to his other illustration of the levels of meaning, the fear of the Lord section, that's where he reminds you of one of the sad to record things. He says, I come here and I find you on the first two levels of meaning in terms of your use of the adjutants by and large in any sort of an extensive way. In other words, I find you submindal in the eyes of those of us who come from higher domains. I would lead you up. Remember how he says that? So that the seventh adjutant makes this the third level of meaning. And then you have three cosmic intuitions. One for each of the next three levels. 4, 5, and 6. And three cosmic intuitions. Logical acumen, moral discrimination, spiritual insight. Give you that logical level, moral level, spiritual level. Okay. You know, the reason that in that illustration about the golden rule, he calls the fourth level of meaning the level of brotherly love, it takes logic to come to that. You know, if you recognize that God is your father, and I also recognize that God is my father, we can have a collective recognition deductively. It's like, well, wait a minute. If God is my father and God is your father, then we're brothers. Yeah. It takes the first cosmic intuition to recognize that you have that level of brotherly love as a consequence of we have a common spiritual father. But, and that's we often illustrate it in the hourglass, where the third level, the level of the mind, is the neck of the hourglass, right in the middle. And the upper three make the temple carved out by the Holy Spirit. You know? She gives you capacity, carves out that temple within. The lower three, 0, 1, and 2, see, there's an upper three and a lower three. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the 0, 1, and 2 are the pre-adjutant and made by pre-adjutant and adjutant mind. With that nexus adjutant being the seventh adjutant, so that it not only looks down to the lower mindal activity and tries to get it symmetric, as the energy of symmetry. Remember how I got that little annotation there on the chart about the seventh adjutant. But it also has an upper boundary that looks up, and is the doorway into the temple. Through wisdom, you can have insight. Yeah? That helped to get it kind of a little bit more on the tip of your tongue again?
Yeah.
You cannot spend enough time on your own reflecting on the levels of meaning. There are, other than the threefold actuality, there isn't anything that's more foundational than the levels of meaning and understanding the fifth epical revelation. An awful lot of the book is written assuming that you've figured out the levels of meaning, and they're alluding to it in the paragraph. And if you don't know that they're alluding to the levels of meaning, you can't interpret the paragraph. It's very, very fundamental. Animalism and materialism. So we have in not just in simplistic things, not just acting like a carnivore or piling up gold coins. That's not what all we mean by animalism and materialism. Animalism goes all the way up to still being sub third circular. Okay, and materialism includes material idealism. So it's when you think about it in that truer, broader sense, there just isn't anything on the planet that's ready for a Trinity teacher, Sonia.
That's right.
And that's kind of the point. So someone's going to have to do a lot of work here, Michael or someone has got a lot of work to do before we're ready for the planetary service of the Danels. All right, go ahead, Gene.
Trinity teacher sons have nothing to do with terminating planetary dispensations. They neither judge the dead nor translate the living. But on each planetary mission, they are accompanied by a magisterial son who performs these services. Teacher sons are wholly concerned with the initiation of a spiritual age, with the dawn of the era of spiritual realities on an evolutionary planet. They make real the spiritual counterparts of material knowledge and temporal wisdom.
Okay. Again, just focus on some of the details there so that you can start to get a more intuitive feeling of what's going on here with the Trinity teacher son. First of all, just a little technical aside. So when a magisterial son comes, that's what kind of a... Three different things that a magisterial son does. What do they call that? If you flip back to page 226, it's called a what?
They adjudicate.
That's called a judicial action. Remember, they have judicial actions, magisterial missions, and then, of course, bestowal missions.
Okay.
Referring to the magisterial sons doing a judicial action. Let's try to see if, so we don't... lose that stuff that we've been going through here. Bring it up here. Okay, and we're talking about a spiritual age again. And you mean in a very general sense. A way that's obvious, as it says, with the dawn of the era of spiritual realities, not spiritual actualities, the bestowal son, the spiritual uplifter, established the spiritual actuality. Now we're talking about the fourth block here, reality. Okay. And then, remember how back here we had, these adventures in wisdom and truth, in the previous one? Here we have, referring to that again, they make real the spiritual counterparts of material knowledge and temporal wisdom. So, they're going to really begin to take us beyond, even with the uplifters, they're going to take us beyond what you can really get with our parochial experience on an inhabited world. They're really going to bring the big picture to us, down to us, so that you begin to go beyond, not being able to do much else but besides have a material experience during your mortal life, just because you're so material. They're going to actually start to really make it so that whole perforce you serve two masters thing becomes much less so. They're going to start to really make it so that material master plays a very minimal role. By the time they're done with us and you enter the age of light and life, that other mass, that perforce master that you must serve, is almost negligible for mortals that live in an age of light and life.
The debt has been served.
Yeah, and that's why they say you start to get personal seraphim coming in huge numbers. Finally, in other words, you have a lot of third circlers when you get into light and life. You almost have Marantia creatures on the world at that point. Because in the next life, you don't perforce serve two masters. You leave that other master behind. And see, to the degree that it's possible, they really bring that into play, where you're just barely paying your dues to the material master then. So, really, establishing these spiritual counterparts, really making it so that merely material individuality just doesn't, and circumscribed temporal consciousness just never has the final say anymore, in what's going on the planet. That's what they're up to. Cosmic consciousness. Really getting cosmic consciousness. The kind of stuff that, like they tell you, that once you get into the mansion world a ways, then you can really start talking about cosmic consciousness. Well, that, what is only possible for us now when we go through several mansion worlds, begins to be literally, the experience on the mortal sphere in the wake of their actions. So that you're starting to have a world that's sort of like fifth mansion world sort of status.
That's why if your whole local universe is settled, there's no more mansion
world. Yeah. Okay, so... But again, it's knowledge and wisdom are there, including knowledge. So you're not going into airy-fairy spiritual land, see? They're trying to remind you that this is cosmic. And so you have a very strong relationship to knowledge. Doesn't mean that you do advanced mathematical analysis or something, not like that, but you are firmly grounded.
It would also mean you have to have the intellectual capacity
right, and see, all this, you have to have a people that are capable of functioning, you know, eventually, you know, after 1,000 years of help, functioning at that advanced mansion world sort of a stage. Okay. Yeah. And we all know that, yeah, we're expecting to spend quite a bit of time on the first mansion world still. So, so, okay.
A few million years.
All right. Here's the order.
The teacher sons usually remain on their visitation planets for 1,000 years of planetary time. One teacher son presides over the planetary millennial reign and is assisted by 70 associates of his order. The Danels do not incarnate or otherwise so materialize themselves as to be visible to mortal beings. Therefore, is contact with the world of visitation maintained through the activities of the brilliant evening stars, local universe personalities who are associated with the Trinity teacher sons.
Okay, a bunch of things there. One of the things that should really give you pause is like, well, okay, so they're not, they don't incarnate, so I can't see them directly, but they're going to be teaching me. And the way they do it is with the brilliant evening star. It's like, well, I can't see a brilliant evening star either. Yeah, we are a ways away. You've got to have a planet that's in a mode where a brilliant evening star is tangible to you in some straightforward way.
Yeah, that sets the bar pretty
high. Right. Pretty high bars that are being set here. Okay. You know, when the brilliant evening star is standing next to Jesus, you know, at bar mitzvah time and says, you know, it's time you were about your father's business, he doesn't see that, okay, that brilliant evening star, okay? And then, you know, you think about, even at age 12, the kind of stuff he did in the temple there, you know, could you do that? I couldn't do that. I couldn't give those, you know, those speeches that he gave there at age 12. Okay, so something that's definitely above me, even though it's 12 years old, couldn't see a brilliant evening star. You know, and just it's in some very advanced stage that we really know nothing of right now.
Yeah. Well, don't you think it'll be mindful? It seems like if they're not going to be visible to mortal beings, it would be more mindful.
Yeah, but no, see that, you know, and they explain this more in other places. The brilliant evening stars make this possible. They tell you very definitively. They're the ones you engage, and it's through the brilliant evening stars that you get the teaching of the Trinity teacher son. So, I mean, I've got to have some, I mean, maybe it's just a mindful visualization in the same way that, you know, say Adam and Eve see the lower spiritual beings. It's not because their eyeballs, you know, literally see them like, you know, you see this table or this couch or whatever, photons don't interact with the Melchizedek. Okay, so you can't use these eyeballs, even if you're Adam and Eve, to see a Melchizedek. Okay, you see them with a quote-unquote mind's eye. You know, you have to have a high enough mindal energy that you have a relationship with that spirit being and can
resolve it,
feel it, see it, you know. Now, we also know that they are, you know, we do have an extended range of vision when you start getting, you know, up in those stages of a planet. But no matter how you think about it, if I'm going to have some sort of intimate interaction with a brilliant evening star, I got to be a lot more than I am right now. A lot, lot more than I am right now.
We have extended abilities visually in light and life.
Yeah, you know, you can see the secondary midwares. Which is one of the reasons why they're incorporated into the culture at that point normally.
Right.
This is a natural thing. So,
right. Go up and shake hands.
They humanize.
Well, yeah, and even before, you know, they start to go down that path of starting to really shift into an ascender mode. Now, on the bigger picture stuff, Trinity teacher sons, brilliant evening stars, and finaliters, there's some very deep connections between the three. Like if you read about the brilliant evening stars, they refer to that. So keep that in mind too. You know, who's it, you know, the Trinity teacher sons are in charge, and then in the next age, in the age of light and life, who's really running things, the finalities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, these two are very intimately connected. They're paired together. And the brilliant evening stars are a key element in this as well. Brilliant evening stars have a very mysterious, deep connection to the gravity messengers that the finalities are using, and the brilliant evening stars are very close to the Trinity teacher suns, always are. One other little side bringing in the brilliant evening stars, when they're talking about teaching mortals, during the ascension, or teaching, say, seraphim, on high, the worlds of the brilliant evening stars, there's three of them that are assigned to teaching the mortals, and there's seven sets, remember? three of the sets that are assigned to teaching the other celestials, like seraphim and stuff. Those equal. Remember how they said that those two teaching ministries were equal? Same number of worlds for both groups. And then the seventh world is about all this mysterious stuff, connection to the finalities and all that stuff. So, if you want to, go up and read a little bit about the brilliant evening stars, if you want to pick up some more of that stuff. Back to this Trinity Teacher Sun Age on a world. Again, another reminder of where we've got some serious growth and change to undergo before this is going to happen. All right.
The Danals may return many times to an inhabited world, and following their final mission, the planet will be ushered into the settled status of a sphere of light and life. The evolutionary goal of all the mortal and inhabited worlds of the present universe age. The mortal core of the finality has much to do with the sphere settled in light and life, and their planetary activities touch upon those of the teacher suns. Indeed, the whole order of Danal sonship is intimately connected with all phases of finaliter activities in the evolutionary creations of time and space.
So again, we're talking about how much linkage there is there. And then there's that other little point in there. Where is it? The Danals may return many times. And each time it's 1,000 years. See, we have no idea how this is going to work on our planet. There's some humility and some patience that you want to bring into your speculations about light and life there, too. It's at least 1,000, but many times it's a lot more than just 1,000 years. And when we've got, again, depending on how this is played out, how this plays out prior to the first Trinity Teacher Son, it's going to have a lot to do with how many it'll take. Because how much of this getting one language and one religion and all that, how much are we going to be doing this all as one group, in a sense? Maybe they'll have to come multiple times because we'll have to get, maybe they'll bring this group forward and then they'll bring this group forward, and maybe that's why they would have to do multiple ones with us. But if coincidentally all of the lesser groups go away for whatever reason, it might be quicker. It's just the fact that it says many there.
You thinking that's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't know how you can really make it. You can just speculate about the deal. You can certainly see how you could have either option, but who knows? Those are the sorts of things that all of the revelators know that no one can actually know. And just like it says in the Bible, about those sorts of things. No one can know that sort of stuff.
Chris, I got a fun one. Let's say somebody's really good at something or whatnot, and they're having too much fun. And so I guess one of the angels said, no, we need to let you finish that where it's a little bit more spectacular on the mansion world.
moving you right along. You know, we all know that there's been many a general who's decided that that was the most pragmatic approach. You know, just kill them all and let God sort them out. and we all know also that in Job we have, even though he slay me. So, yeah, these possibilities are in play.
But after the rebellion, they let it dry out for some time. And because there was so much benefit to the difficulty in giving those every opportunity, so maybe because of the big mess we have, those that are out on the other, the outer edges of the bell curve,
mm-hmm.
will be shepherded along and will be lifted up just for maximum benefit. I mean, we are a decimal planet, and part of the reason that that's a good thing, having people out on the edges of the bell curve, is that, they have the most potential.
Right. Yeah, and see, and that's why sometimes the post-bestowal age, they tell you, can be as long as 100,000 years, even as kind of a normal sort of a thing. And, you remember there's another spot where a revelator is alluding to that, we are technically in a post-bestowal sun age, you normally can have magisterial suns during the post-bestowal sun age. Remember, the bestowal sun is only around for basically the span of a mortal life, so they're not around for a great length of time. We could certainly get us all sorted out during the post-bestowal sun age, with some help of magisterial suns and whatnot. And that that time it would take to get a very broad bell curve all together during the post-bestowal sun age might be the 100,000-year thing. And there's there's another spot where a revelator refers to that, where he says, remember when he's talking about where you can speculate on how old an Ancient of Days is? And he says, so you've gone 200,000 years since the rebellion, and he says, even if it takes another 100,000 years before it's adjudicated, and he's used that 100,000 years, so, that's one of the things that revelator was thinking of, that maybe it'll play out over a long span of time, and those who, want to join the rebellion will, but, it'll be over a long period of time, and all those that can, even if they're far in the tails, will slowly bring themselves and will be one unified and people by the time 100,000 years rolls along and the Trinity Teacher Son could come. That's another possible mode for fixing this planet. And there's a lot of things that argue with that. I mean, Michael being, wanting to let mercy, have as much time as possible rather than, using a heavy hand of justice, to solve the problem. I mean, see, that argues for the 100,000 years rather than, we'll sort it out in just a few centuries and then we'll get a Trinity Teacher Son.
Yeah.
So you can argue both ways very persuasively. All right. Let's see. Where were we? Oh, yeah, right here. Okay, yeah.
The Trinity Teacher Son seemed to
be... No.
I'm ahead of myself.
Yep.
The Danels may return many times...
You read that.
Yes.
Trinity Teacher Son.
Oh, we did.
Same. Yes.
Oh, okay. I was wrong. Okay.
Let's keep up there.
That myself.
Sorry, I looked up. I was thinking we just talked about the brilliant evening stars, but I forgot we just went off. We went off on such a tangent there.
We busted.
Yep. Okay, sorry about that.
The Trinity Teacher Sons seem to be so completely identified with the regime of mortal progression through the earlier stages of evolutionary ascension that we are often led to speculate regarding their possible association with the finaliters in the undisclosed career of the future universes. We observe that the administrators of the super universes are part Trinity origin personalities and part Trinity embraced ascendant evolutionary creatures. We firmly believe that the teacher sons and the finaliters are now engaged in acquiring the experience of time association, which may be the preliminary training to prepare them for close association in some unrevealed future destiny. On Universa, it is our belief that when the super universes are finally settled in light and life, these paradise teacher sons, who have become so thoroughly familiar with the problems of evolutionary worlds and have been so long associated with the career of evolutionary mortals, will probably be transferred to eternal association with the paradise core of the finality.
Okay, well, let's just focus on that last point first.
That's cool.
Okay. What have we, you know, recently recognized in studying here these most recent papers that really helps you to appreciate why this perfecter of wisdom and his group say that bit at the end? Why would they suspect that a Trinity origin being, Trinity teacher son, would come into such sort of synonymous association with finaliters?
Because we're Trinity.
We're Trinity.
That's right. Say again. That's, you see, once you make that little thing, you see there's a number of spots in the book that are really telling you this. Again, we take an oath to the Trinity as finaliters. And remember, Gene, you know, when you were bringing up earlier, see how they were referring to, see, where was that? When you're talking about the two of them acquiring, where was that, stuff together. We firmly believe that the teacher sons and the finaliters are now engaged in acquiring the experience of time associations.
Already preparing.
So, in other words, that second phase of our finite career is when we really start to come into a harmonizing relationship with Trinity origin beings, especially these Trinity teacher sons. Let's see, what else do we have in there? Oh, just a quiz. Who can tell me an example of a Trinity embraced ascendant evolutionary creature?
Mighty Messenger.
Yeah. Anyone think of the other two? Anyone think of the other two groups?
Those without name and number, and those had authority.
There you go. Very good.
So
all right.
And their associates, the universes, and
those are the Trinity origin person.
Right, their associates.
Yeah. So I just wanted to answer a question, you know, give yourself a quiz when you're reading like that. It's like, oh, I know what they're talking about there. That's like Mighty Messengers. And make sure you understand what you're reading when you're going through it. Let's see. When they're talking here, well, when this Perfector of Wisdom is talking here about this association, you notice how he's carefully qualifying. He's trying his best not to assume, but you know, if you go up and read, like I said, about the brilliant evening stars, worlds, it looks like it's a duh. that what he's talking about here is what the destiny is. I mean, everything points to what he's describing here. So, the only reason, again, that he would not just state it definitively is he knows full well that between now and having all this super universes settled in light and life, there could be all kinds of things like Magistan. You know, the things, it's like, oh my goodness, no one had any notion that that was going to come into play. And that really changes everything. You know, there could always be some sort of a really radical transformation, you know, that comes from the Supreme Being. All right, let's wrap it up here.
Section 10, United Ministry of the Paradise Sons. All the Paradise Sons of God are divine in origin and in nature. The work of each Paradise Son in behalf of each world is just as if the Son of Service were the first and only Son of God. Paradise Sons are the divine presentation of the acting natures of the three persons of deity to the domains of time and space. The Creator, Magisterial, and Teacher Sons are the gifts of the eternal deities to the children of men and to all other universe creatures of ascension potential. These sons of God are the divine ministers who are unceasingly devoted to the work of helping the creatures of time attain the high spiritual goal of eternity. In the Creator Sons, the love of the Universal Father is blended with the mercy of the Eternal Son and is disclosed to the local universes in the creative power, loving ministry, and understanding sovereignty of the Michaels. In the Magisterial Sons, the mercy of the Eternal Son, united with the ministry of the Infinite Spirit, is revealed to the evolutionary domains and the careers of these Avenals of judgment, service, and bestowal. In the Trinity Teacher Sons, the love, mercy, and ministry of the three Paradise deities are coordinated on the highest time-space value levels and are presented to the universes as living truth, divine goodness, and true spiritual beauty.
Okay. Notice what they're trying to do here in this paragraph. They're trying to gently guide you from the initial seven absolutes of infinity, father-like recognition that they put forward in the book, over into this bigger picture where the Trinity starts to come more directly into play, and you have the mother and that other side of the picture. So look what they do here. So they're using the love, mercy, ministry triplet we have with the three absolute persons. And so with the Creator Son and the Magisterial Sons, it's very direct. You have the love from the Father and the mercy from the Son for the two parents to give a Creator Son. You have the mercy from the Son, the ministry from the Infinite Spirit, two parents, make a Magisterial Son. Okay. And then they use that very direct fact about those two sons. And then putting the love, mercy, ministry together, when you're, like we said, when you're thinking about the Paradise Trinity, the Paradise Trinity you can think of as embodying the undivided love, mercy, and ministry. Okay. So they say. So now, if you've got the three persons figured out now, use leverage off of that to try to start understanding how the Trinity Teacher Son works. So, in the Trinity Teacher Sons, the love, mercy, and ministry of the three Paradise deities. Deities. Are coordinated on the highest time-space value levels and are presented to the universes as living truth, divine goodness, and true spiritual beauty. So what they're suggesting here, if you reflect on this, you'll finally come to this recognition. It's like, okay, so if I think about a magisterial son engaging me, there's mercy and ministry there. So, and the ministry, of course, is what's directly engaging me. So he gets a hold of me with the ministry side and leverages me up to the mercy side of his nature. And then he hands me off to a Creator Son. And the Creator Son grabs a hold of me with that mercy nature that I've now been leveraged up to, and leverages me up to the love nature that's inherent in him. So I go up from ministry through mercy to love, but I'm not done. And we're in a, from a purely fatherlike point of view, you always think of that, you're done there. Just like you just are first understanding the levels of meaning. And you go from fear up to love. You go, okay, I've gotten up to the top level of love, I'm done.
You're just starting.
No, you can go through love to something else. You can go through the first center to the other side, okay, of the universal one infinity, to the paradise trinity side. Coordinate action, coordinated. Go through the looking glass, as it were, okay? Go beyond love, through love, into a relationship with the Trinity. Trinity teacher sons can help you with that. When I go up the levels of meaning, I get to the top, what do? I go up into a cosmic level now. Remember how we talked about taking those rungs of the ladder and lifting it up and wrapping it around into facets, you know, on a cosmic level? Okay. Trinity teacher sons are giving us that cosmic enlightenment. Okay. And so when I go through love, and I manifest through this relationship, this coordinated relationship with the Paradise Trinity, and I manifest, what do I get? I get a presentation to the universes of living truth, divine goodness, and true spiritual beauty. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I thought truth, beauty, and goodness was the way I kind of thought about how I take that threefold actuality, you know, here, beauty, truth, goodness, and I go up to love. Isn't that the way I'm supposed to think about truth, beauty, and goodness? Is there sort of the means to love, another way of getting up to love? Not something that's sort of post-love? Here they're saying it's post. Oh, wait a minute. It's not truth, beauty, goodness. It's not in that order. What order is it in?
Truth, goodness, beauty.
They put it, you know, every once in a while, they flip the order. Remember what we talked about, why do they always say truth, beauty, goodness? Because from a bottom-up point of view, you know, truth is in the associative block. That's what is immediately in front of our, you know, inner vision as we begin to, you know, examine this. His mind is in the, you know, associative domain. So we see truth. Okay, more material origin. We're doing this bottom up, individuality up to unity. So the next thing that we bring in is the individuality side. Beauty. Truth, beauty. And then third, goodness. Bring in the unity, goodness. So it goes truth, beauty, goodness. From a bottom, just a second, dude. From a bottom up point of view, you know, and in the experiential order, it's truth, beauty, goodness. In terms of the order of recognition, really, really getting your mind wrapped around the direct fact of those three. That's the order that you will experience them in if it's true. I guess you have to just say it that way. From a top-down point of view, remember the mother comes top-down from the Trinity? We always talk about that. You're going fundamentally top-down, which is what the Trinity teacher sons are going to be helping you to get, that real top-down cosmic perspective. The unity point of view, the top-down point of view, okay, truth is still first, but I go to the unity second, goodness, and then beauty. Yeah, they use that, they point out that's the order that the adjuster sees it too. For the adjuster, it's beauty, goodness, or beauty, goodness. No, I'm saying wrong. Truth. There we go. Okay. That's
not good. Truth, goodness.
Truth, goodness, beauty. Sorry about that. Yeah. For the adjuster, it's also truth, goodness, beauty. See, and here we see it again. But they even have taken it beyond that, though. Notice all the adjectives that they're, you know, augmentation they're throwing in here. Not just truth, living truth. Well, to be really living, okay, that's that personality thing. Remember how we were talking about Trinity teacher sons? They're really bringing in this personality character. So they're stressing that. The full-blown, living truth, full personality, you know, engagement of truth, not just sort of the initial inklings of truth, like in the associative block here. Okay, and divine goodness, full-blown, you know, where's divinity in here? Down here in the personality block. Okay. Divine goodness, full-blown goodness. That only person, you know, only a person, you know, has a hope for divinity. Rocks, you know, don't go to divinity. Okay, you know, mere spirit substance doesn't go to divinity. Spirit substance is not an alien to divine. Only personality can purpose it to divinity, etc. Okay, and then again, we're top down. So, and they're emphasizing the cosmic, so it's true, and spiritual beauty. I want you to really bias your thoughts away from mere material beauty. So that you, you know, and definitely bottom up, beauty, you know, is initially recognized in an individuality thing. You know, the Grand Canyon is beautiful, or a sunset is beautiful, or whatever. You know, you're thinking in material sense. But remember, they make real the spiritual counterparts of material knowledge and temporal wisdom. It's those Trinity to really get you into that pure top-down mode relationship to beauty, true spiritual beauty. So that's, you know, that's what they're all about. They're about really going beyond what you get in this, you know, the Father initiates you and you go up the levels of meaning, but then you start to really come into relationship to the Trinity and the Mother, have a cosmic character. Here again, you're upstepped by Adam and Eve, and then a magisterial son, and then a bestowal son, but then the cosmos starts to come into play. Going, really going beyond mere spiritual consciousness, anything that the bestowal son's ministry can give you. Remember, even a creator son is a bestowal son. Even that creator son was taught by whom? Yeah, Trinity teacher sons. Okay. It's like, well, are they really that high up in rank? And when an Eternal of Days leaves his world, who subs for him? Again, just try to. We're talking about having been taught, having some ability to be taught by a being who can sub for an Eternal of Days. Okay?
That should help.
We're talking about going beyond love, which, in any way we can imagine, in any direct sense right now, well, that's a ceiling. There is no beyond. Beyond that is the looking glass. You have to sort of imagine going through the looking glass right now to get to this magical other land, you know, that goes beyond the first center. But that's what we're talking about.
I was puzzled by that true spiritual beauty, but if you remember that spirit is a substance, then
yeah,
that it makes a little bit of sense.
What does that say about finality or destiny?
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
You take an oath to the Paradise Trinity because you go out revealing what stems from the Paradise Trinity. You go out God the Mother revealing. You go out revealing the whole. Okay. The triunity. Right. What it looks like when these are seamlessly woven together is one fact. You know, not just, you don't just go out revealing a spiritual light that your spiritual father initiated in you. You've gone beyond that. So, just driving home, I mean, this is what the fifth epical revelation is about. It's about going to love and beyond, to infinity and beyond, to eternity and beyond. Yeah? You immerse yourself in eternity to be on paradise. Then you go beyond that. That's what the real meat of the fifth heaven. It's so beyond, you know, some glorification of the monotheistic God the Father picture. We're talking about, you know, really starting to contemplate yourself in ways that humans have never thought about themselves. That's what we're trying to do here. And let's wrap up here.
In the local universes, these orders of sonship collaborate to effect the revelation of the deities of paradise to the creatures of space. As the father of a local universe, a creator son portrays the infinite character of the universal father. As the bestowal sons of mercy, the Avenals reveal the matchless nature of the eternal son of infinite compassion. As the true teachers of ascending personalities, the Trinity Danal sons disclose the teacher personality of the Infinite Spirit. In their divinely perfect cooperation, Michaels, Avenals, and Danals are contributing to the actualization and revelation of the personality and sovereignty of God the Supreme in and to the time-space universes. In the harmony of the triune activities, these paradise sons of God ever function in the vanguard of the personalities of deity as they follow the never-ending expansion of the divinity of the first great source and center from the everlasting isle of paradise into the unknown depths of space. Presented by a perfecter of wisdom from Universa.
Okay, two things quickly there. Actualization and revelation of the personality and sovereignty of God the Supreme. If I want to really stress what I mean by the personality of God the Supreme, I use the expression God the Mother. Remember? Where does the personal spiritual nature of God the Supreme come from?
Yeah.
The Trinity. Personality, God the Supreme, God the Mother. Sovereignty of God the Supreme. I want to stress that. What would I say?
Almighty.
God the Almighty. Okay. Just notice that's what they're alluding to there. Personality and sovereignty. In other words, the actualization and revelation of God the Mother and God the Almighty. Together, integrated together as God the Supreme. Any way you can say that. Now there's one little curious thing there that you might have noticed. The Trinity Danal sons disclose the teacher personality of the Infinite Spirit. Huh? The teacher personality of the Infinite Spirit? What is that? I don't, you know, we read the Third Source and Center papers a long time. I don't remember a lot of use of the word teacher up there in those papers. What are they talking about? You know, get precise. The Infinite Spirit. Not the conjoint actor. The Infinite Spirit. Well, that's not a person. Oh, this is just like the personality and sovereignty of God the Supreme. So, the personality, when you use the expression Infinite Spirit and you're talking about personality, what's the personal designation? The Infinite Mother Spirit. You know, think about the personalization of that aspect of the Third Source and Center. It manifests personally. It's not manifesting personally, it's the Infinite Spirit. That's impersonal. The Infinite Mother Spirit. So thinking of the Infinite Mother Spirit as a teacher personality, well, definitely the Mother stems from the Trinity, and these Trinity teacher sons are Trinity origin, and that seems to match up. But what's a true teacher? The purpose of education is to develop and sharpen what?
The mind.
What does it it say in paper 16, section 6?
Does it use the term cosmic?
Well, you just paraphrase. What are we getting at? The purpose of education is to develop and sharpen your cosmic consciousness, right? Your relationship to the three cosmic intuitions, your relationship to universal harmony. Well, the Trinity teacher sons are about. You know, to think of the infinite Mother Spirit as being that largest embodiment of a fact that stems from the Paradise Trinity. The largest expression of the whole and the individuality of the whole. Of a cosmos. Of a universal harmony. And a teacher. Okay? To be a true teacher, you have to have a relation to the whole. A true teacher is someone who knows the whole and then can help you with a part within the whole. Historically, in order to really qualify to be a teacher of any subject like geology, you had to get a PhD, a doctor of philosophy, in order to be a teacher. And true philosophy is about the whole. Right. So that's to think about all the ramifications of that. If you want to be a true teacher, if you want to be truly educated, you want to have cosmic consciousness, we're talking about the same thing. This distinction is vital. Okay? You want to be part of the cosmic system. You want to take the light in cultivating a relation to the whole. And to see that this goes all the way from Trinity teacher sons engaging us on a planet, this totality attitude that you can progressively have a greater and greater relationship to goes all the way up to the infinite Mother Spirit. You know, the infinite totality attitude. Yeah. All right, so that's what's between the lines there. And again, see, just with just the seven absolutes of infinity, what on earth does teacher personality of the infinite spirit mean? It's just a strange statement. You can only interpret that when you've got what appear, you know, from current perspective, from initial perspective, is only what's through the looking glass. But if you turn it around, that's going to become real. You know, and the lowly individuality that used to seem so real will start to seem shadowy, like what's through the looking glass. Take to light and cultivate. The true purpose of education is to be able to have a cosmic perspective on things, to turn everything around, and to begin to come into relationship to whole, so that you can be really living. This distinction is vital. Living. Vitality, living. Okay. All right. So even though the Trinity teacher sons, as a fact on this planet, for many in many different ways, is down the road. Why did they spend so much time talking about it? Because it's relevant now.
Yeah.
I mean, for the same reason that there's Trinity teacher sons on this planet right now, like they said, planning for the future, even if it's 100,000 years down the road. You can be planning for your future now too. You can take delight in reflecting on what you know the real goal is. The goal is not to just come into relationship with the bestowal son. It's to go beyond that. And if you do go beyond that, there's a possibility of light and life. But only if you go beyond that. Only if you go beyond love, you know, into the cosmos, you know, into living truth, divine goodness, and true spiritual beauty. All right, let's take a moment.